Right now, up Little Cottonwood Canyon, hundreds of ornithologists and other scientists representing nearly 100 organizations from 14 countries in South, Central, and North America are meeting to discuss and shape hemispheric plans for bird conservation. It's the fifth conference for Partners in Flight, a cooperative effort to conserve bird populations, involving partnerships among federal, state, and local government agencies, philanthropic foundations, professional organizations, conservation groups, industry, the academic community, and private individuals. These conferences are held more or less every 5 years, and this year the theme is Advancing Bird Conservation Across the Americas. Joining us today on the show, we have two Partners in Flight members, Dr. Daniel Leben, a conservation biologist from American Bird Conservancy, a nonprofit based out of Virginia charged with organizing this year's conference, and Dr. Ashley Dayer, a conservation social scientist at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology in New York. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. So, Dan, let's hear a little bit about how you initially became interested in birds, and then how did you transition into conservation?
I have always been interested in birds from childhood. Like many little boys, I was interested in dinosaurs and pretty quickly realized that the opportunities to observe dinosaurs outside were few and far between. And so I was always interested in fish, reptiles, all sorts of critters, but fairly quickly settled on birds is what I was most passionate about. And I've stuck with them since.
Ashley, what about you? How did you initially become interested in birds and then transition into conservation?
Well, actually, I started with conservation and then transitioned to birds, so I'm a little bit of the reverse case. So I started out working in marine conservation, and I worked with whales and dolphins and a little bit with seabirds. And then I took a job after college with Maui Forest Bird Recovery Project out in Hawaii, and that was my first full bird job. And I was working there with the po'o'uli, which is a Hawaiian honeycreeper that eats snails. And at the time that I was working with them, there were three individuals left of the entire species. And so it was an extremely exciting project to be working on, where we were trying to get the male and female to come together because they had distinct home ranges. And we'd take helicopters into the rainforest and chase them around. Well, unfortunately, a couple of years after I stopped working on the project, I was just there for a year-long internship, the bird is believed to have gone extinct. The last one was brought into captivity and didn't successfully breed. Obviously, they weren't able to get another one. So at that point, I was really sold on bird conservation, and I don't ever want to see another bird go extinct.
So can you explain a little bit about what is Partners in Flight?
Partners in Flight is a consortium of groups that are concerned about migratory birds. And they're all interested in studying and working to conserve migratory birds. And they're doing this in order to try to boost migratory bird populations. This meeting is about getting some of the best scientific minds and conservation minds that we have to try to figure out what are the best and most important actions that we can take to stop the declines in migratory birds and boost populations of migratory birds, particularly the ones that are of most concern. And so participants are going to be breaking out into different groups, focused on different regions of our hemisphere, and try to figure out what are those next actions that we want to take, how much do those actions cost, who should implement them, and put them together in plans that can guide implementation, guide action on the ground. And hopefully that will all result in more birds.
And that brings up an interesting point that most bird conservation can't be effective by protecting habitat in just a single location. Maybe we can talk about migration. You said you're going to focus on migratory birds. Why is that, and what are some of the challenges that migrating birds face?
So I work at ABC, at American Bird Conservancy in the International Division, and we do a lot of work to create protected areas, parks, nature reserves, to protect those key places for resident birds. And it's a complicated job, but it's a fairly simple strategy because you can protect one place, and if you do it well enough and if it's big enough, hopefully you can have a population that's protected right there. With migratory birds, they face a special challenge in that many of our migratory birds are breeding up in Canada, perhaps, or the Arctic. They then migrate south, and they pass through a variety of different habitats. During their migration, they face a variety of different threats that have nothing to do with their habitat, including collisions with glass windows, collisions with wind turbines, collisions with communication towers. They may stop to rest on a lawn and get nailed by a free-roaming cat, among many other threats that they face. Then they get to their wintering grounds, and they have to find a place to spend many more months, usually, than they spend up here. And so they face these different challenges at each of these different stages of their life. And so it's an extra challenge to address that full life cycle of the bird, and also to identify what part of that life cycle might be the limiting factor. They might be fine on the breeding grounds, but be getting hammered on the wintering grounds. Or perhaps it's something that's between the two, that during migration, that's when most of the mortality is happening. It turns out that it's probably slightly different for each species. So the conservation strategies need to be tailor-made in some instances for the circumstances of each bird.
Let's talk about the wonder of birds. I was hoping we could get an overview of how many there are in the world. How many species there are, and how much they can differ from one another as species. Dan, I think I'll direct that to you.
Sure. There actually isn't a correct answer. It sort of depends on who you talk to. But roughly, let's say there are about 10,000 bird species on Earth. And they are tremendously variable, from tiny little hummingbirds to the gigantic ostrich. And they are wonderful. They come in all kinds of shapes and sizes. They live pretty much everywhere. They live in at the tops of the tallest mountains. They live in the Arctic, the Antarctic. They live out in the middle of the ocean. They live in the desert. They live in lush places like the rainforest. And they do all sorts of different things. They eat all sorts of different foods, from seeds to fish to small mammals to almost anything you could think of. There are even birds in the Galapagos that will take blood off of injured sea lions. They nest just about everywhere you might imagine. For example, swifts. There's some kinds of swifts that nest behind waterfalls, which are very protected and safe. There are other birds that bury their eggs in big mounds, and the earth actually heats them up and helps incubate them for them. So there is an amazing variety of birds and an amazing variety of things that they do.
Do you guys, and Ashley, I don't know if you want to add to that.
No, okay. That's great.
All right, so do you guys have, I want to get an answer from each of you on this one. Do you guys have a favorite species of bird? And if you do, or maybe, if it's more than one, you can name them, but what is it and why?
Okay, I have lots of favorite species of birds, but one that I always come back to is my favorite species since I was a little kid, which is the chickadee. And out here, we would have the mountain chickadee, but where I grew up, we had the black-capped chickadee in upstate New York. And the black-capped chickadee was a great bird to come to our backyard bird feeder. They're very friendly and curious. I spend hours calling to them and trying to get them to call back to me as well. But that's a species that I just had a lot of interest in and was one that I could see, any day of the year out in my backyard, which I just really appreciated.
You can decline to do this, but I was wondering how would you call to a black-capped chickadee if you were going to?
Chickadee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. There we go.
I love it.
Musical.
Dan, how about yourself?
One thing I love about birds is the variety. So I don't actually have a particular favorite individual species, but one group of birds I really love are the hummingbirds, the family of hummingbirds. It's one of the most diverse families of birds in the world. There's hundreds of them. They only live in the Americas. They're spunky. They're confident birds. Ounce for ounce, these are the most powerful birds in the world. Because they're so small and such powerful flyers, they can outmaneuver just about anything, and they know it. So they have the confidence that they will actually approach people, whereas most birds, in most circumstances, try to avoid people or go about their business. They are beautiful. A lot of hummingbirds have iridescent feathers on them, particularly in the throat. So if you catch them at the right angle, they really shine bright. Many hummingbirds, particularly in North America here, are migratory. and you've got rufous hummingbirds breeding in Alaska, flying all the way across the continent to Mexico to spend the winter. They might be passing through this area right now. So that's part of their incredible story. Most birds make some kind of sound. And a lot of birds make sound with their voice. Some birds make sound with their feathers. Hummingbirds are one of those groups that they can do both, or some do both. So particularly some of our North American hummingbirds both sing. They have complicated learned songs. They're not songbirds, but they do sing in their own hummingbird song way. And they can also make sounds with their feathers, which are very unlike what you would think of as bird song. They can sound like little UFOs going by, and if they go by fast enough, that's sort of what they are, unidentified flying object.
Wow. Here's a question for you that's kind of out of left field. Why do some species migrate and others do not?
It's a great question. From my perspective, birds are migrating for mainly two reasons. One is to take advantage of resources, and the second is to escape conditions that are unfavorable. So, for example, a lot of our warblers are migratory. Many of these birds come up to North America during our summer when it's warm out, there are lots of insects, and the days are long, so they can go all out feeding, breeding, and they can be very successful with that strategy. So they will often lay more eggs than their counterparts in the tropics that live there all year round. So that gives them the potential to have more offspring. They might be finding more food. They might be breeding under conditions where there are perhaps a lower diversity of predators, because there's every kind of predator down in the tropics. There is a lot of predation up here too, but there are lots of reasons why birds want to come up to the northern latitudes in this scenario to breed and take advantage of this burst of resources during our northern summer. And of course, when winter comes, then that food resource goes away, the temperature goes below where a lot of these birds can tolerate, and so they migrate back to escape those conditions.
Great. You guys, switching gears a bit, you say you're going to develop plans for implementation and so on. I'm wondering what will happen to those plans after the meeting. Who are they going to go to? How is implementation going to occur? And maybe I'll start with Dan on that one, if that's okay.
Sure. Well, many of the most important funding agencies for bird conservation are going to be represented here. And so my understanding is that these plans are being developed with budgets as almost like draft proposals that can be then sent to different funding agencies, whether it's NFWF or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or different nonprofit groups that are active in bird conservation, so that they can start taking parts of those plans and implementing them and turning them into action.
Ashley, do you have any different take on that? Is that, I mean, basically the...
That is. The only thing I would add is that the conference is sort of a first step in terms of this. We realize that within 1 week we're not going to be able to have plans completely done. And so it's certainly a project that's sort of a work in progress. And there's also some folks who weren't able to come from other countries all the way up here. Obviously, we have the array of countries represented, but there's more voices that we'd like to hear. So we'll spend a little bit of time as well trying to make sure that all the folks who are key players really feel comfortable with what's in there. Because what's really unique about this is it's going to be a set of plans that really take everyone's priorities and wrap them up together. And the hope is then we'll be able to not only have funding in terms of specific projects, but also hopefully be able to garner some funding from some larger foundations that's more comprehensive, given that we have such broad-scale buy-in from the conservation community for these plans.
Money, or the lack thereof, is a big consideration. How are you guys planning on overcoming funding gaps? I mean, when you look at, I'll let you guys describe that.
So that's a great question. Funding always is a challenge, especially in rough times when there's so many other things besides conservation that people are interested in. I think one of the key things that we're undertaking here is that we have folks not only from NGOs, non-governmental organizations, from universities, and then also from public agencies, whether they be federal or state, but then also from industry and foundations here as well, so that all folks can think together about what sort of resources they can bring to the table. And one of the key things that happens in conservation, given that we often are stretched for funds, is that people leverage funds by figuring out what capacity can I bring to the table and what capacity can Dan bring to the table. And then from there, what can we do together as a result of those funds? So I think that will certainly happen as a result of even more relationships that will be built at this conference, in addition to hopefully funders will see that given there's such agreement and strategic thinking going on here, that this really is a priority for funding.
Guys, that's all the time we have for today's segment of this interview. Tomorrow, we'll finish our conversation with Dr. Leben and Dr. Dayer by looking at the human dimension of bird conservation. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
And you can find the full version of part one of this interview at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. You're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And that's all the time we have for The Rundown today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, we feature part two of our discussion on bird conservation in the Americas. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.